Far below Solid Jackson's feet, the boat surfaced. Sergeant Colon reached automatically for the screws that held the lid shut.
"Don't open it, Sergeant!" shouted Leonard, rising from his seat.
"The air's getting pretty lived in, sir."
"It's worse outside."
"Worse than in here?
I'm almost certain."
"But we're on the surface." "A surface, Sergeant," said Lord Vetinari. Beside him, Nobby uncorked the seeing device and peered through it.
"We're in a cave?" said Colon.
Sarge," said Nobby.
"Capital. Well worked out," said Lord Vetinari.
"Yes, a cave. You could say that."
Sarge,"
said Nobby again, nudging Colon.
"This isn't a cave, Sarge. It's bigger than a cave, Sarge."
"What, you mean like a cavern?"
"Bigger."
"Bigger than a cavern? More like, a big cavern."
"Yeah, that'd be about right," said Nobby, taking his eye away from the device. "Have a look yourself, Sarge."
Sergeant Colon peered into the tube. Instead of the darkness he was half expecting, he saw the sea's surface bubbling like a boiling saucepan. Green and yellow flashes of lightning danced across the water, illuminating a distant wall that seemed practically a horizon. The tube squeaked around. If this was a cave, it was at least a couple of miles across.
"How long do you think?" said Lord Vetinari behind him.
"Well, the rock has a large proportion of tufa and pumice, very light, and once floated up, the build-up of gas starts to escape very rapidly because of the swell," said Leonard. "I don't know. Perhaps another week? And then I think it takes a very long time for a sufficient bubble to build up again."
"What are they saying, Sarge?" said Nobby. "This place floats?"
"A most unusual natural phenomenon," Leonard went on. "I'd have thought it was just a legend had I not seen it for myself."
"Of course it's not floating," said Sergeant Colon. "Honestly, Nobby, how are you ever going to find out anything when you ask daft questions like that? Land's heavier than water, right? That's why you find it at the bottom of the sea."
"Yeah, but he said pumice, and my grand had a pumice stone that worked a treat for getting tough skin off your feet in the tub, and that'd float."
"That sort of thing happens in bathtubs, maybe," said Colon. "Not in real life. This is just a phenomena. It's not real. Next thing you'll be saying, there's rocks up in the sky."
"Yeah, but I am a sergeant, Nobby."
"Yeah, Sarge."
"It puts me in mind," said Leonard, "of those nautical stories about giant turtles that sleep on the surface, thus causing sailors to think they are an island. Of course, you don't get giant turtles that small."
"Hey, Mr. Quirm, this is an amazing boat," said Nobby.
"Thank you."
"I bet you could even smash up ships with it if you wanted."
There was an embarrassed silence.
"Altogether an interesting experience," said Lord Vetinari, making some notes. "And now, gentlemen, downward and onward, please."
The watchmen drew their weapons.
"They are dregs, sir," said Carrot, "but this is all wrong."
"What do you mean?"
"We are not dead yet."
"They're watching us like cats watch mice," thought Vimes. "We can't run away and we can't win a fight, and they want to see what we'll do next."
"What does General Tacticus have to say about this, sir?" said Carrot.
"There's 100 of them," thought Vimes, "and 6 of us. Except that Detritus is drifting off, and there's no knowing what particular commandment Visit is obeying right now, and Reggie's arms tend to drop off when he gets excited."
"I don't know," he said. "Probably something along the lines of, don't allow this to happen."
"Why don't you check, sir?" said Carrot, not taking his eyes off the watching dregs.
"What?"
"I said, why don't you check, sir?
Right now.
Might be worth a try, sir."
"That's crazy, Captain."
"Yes, sir. The dregs have some very strange notions about crazy people, sir." Vimes pulled out the battered book. The dereg nearest to him, with a grin almost as wide and as curved as his sword, had a certain additional swagger that suggested chieftainship. A huge ancient crossbow was slung on his back.
"I say," said Vimes, "could we just delay things a little?"
He strode towards the man, who looked very surprised, and waved the book in the air.
"This is a book by General Tacticus. Don't know if you ever heard of him. Quite a big name in these parts once. Probably slaughtered your great-great-great-great-grandfather, in fact. And I just want to take a moment to see what he has to say about this situation. You don't mind, do you?"
The man gave Vimes a puzzled look.
This might take a moment. There's no index, but I think I saw something.
The chieftain took a step backwards and looked at the man next to him, who shrugged.
I wonder if you could help me with this word here, Vimes went on, reaching the man's side and holding the book under his nose.
He got another puzzled grin.
What Vimes did next was known in Ankh-Morpork's alleyways as the friendly handshake, and consisted largely of driving his elbow into the man's stomach, then bringing his knee up to meet the man's chin on its way down, gritting his own teeth because of the pain in both knee and ankle, and then drawing his sword and holding it to the dreg's throat before he could scramble up.
"Now, Captain," said Vimes, "I'd like you to say in a loud, clear voice that unless they back off a really long way, this gentleman here is going to be in some very serious legal trouble."
"Mr. Vimes, I don't think..."
"Do it."
The dreg looked into his eyes while Carrot hawked his way through the demand. The man was still grinning. Vimes couldn't risk shifting his gaze, but he sensed some puzzlement and confusion among the tribesmen. Then, as one man, they charged. A Klatchian fishing boat, whose captain knew which way the wind was blowing, made its way to the harbour of Al-Khali. It seemed to the captain that, despite the favourable wind, he wasn't making quite the speed he should. He put it down to barnacles. Vimes awoke with a noseful of camel. There are far worse awakenings, but not as many as you might think. By turning his head, which took some effort, he ascertained that the camel was sitting down. By the sound of things, it was digesting something explosive.
Now, how had he got here?
Oh, gods.
But it should have worked. It was classic. You threatened to cut off the head and the body just folded up.
That was how everyone reacted, wasn't it? That was practically how civilization worked.
Put it down to cultural differences, then. On the other hand, he wasn't dead. According to Carrot, knowing the dregs for 5 minutes and still being alive at the end of it meant that they really, really liked you. On the other hand, he'd just given their headman a handshake, which influenced people without making friends. Well, no sense lying over this saddle bound hand and foot and dying of sunstroke all day. He ought to start being a leader of men again, and would do so just as soon as he could get this camel out of his mouth.
Bingley, 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 beep.
Yes, said Vimes, struggling with his bonds.
Would you like to know about the appointments you missed?
No. I'm trying to get these damn ropes untied.
Do you want me to put that on your to-do list?
Oh, you've woken up, sir. It sounded like Carrot's voice, and it was the sort of thing he'd say. Vimes tried to turn his head. What he saw was mainly a white sheet, but it then became Carrot's face upside down.
They asked if they should untie you, but I said you hadn't been getting enough rest lately, Carrot went on.
Captain, my arms and legs have gone to sleep, Vimes began.
Oh, well done, sir. That's a start, at least.
Carrot?
Yes, sir?
I want you to listen very carefully to the order I am about to give you.
Certainly, sir.
The point I'm making is that it won't be a request, or a suggestion, or some sort of hint.
Understood, sir?
I have, as you know, always encouraged my officers to think for themselves and not blindly obey me. But sometimes in any organisation it is necessary for instructions to be followed to the letter and with alacrity.
Right, sir.
Untie me right now, or you'll bloody well live to regret untying me.
Sir, I believe there is an inadvertent inconsistency in...
Carrot, of course, sir.
His ropes were cut. He slid down onto the sand. The camel turned its head, looked at him with its nostrils for a moment, and then looked away. Vimes managed to sit upright, while Carrot busied himself cutting the rest of his bonds.
Captain, why are you wearing a white sheet?
It's a burnous, sir. Very practical for desert wear. The Dregs gave them to us.
Us? The rest of us, sir. Everyone's okay?
Oh, yes.
But they attacked.
Yes, sir, but they only wanted to take us prisoner, sir. One of them did accidentally cut Reggie's head off, but he did help him sew it on again, so no real harm done there.
I thought Dregs didn't take prisoners.
Beats me too, sir, but they say if we try to escape, they'll cut our feet off, and Reg says he hasn't got enough thread for everyone, sir.
Vimes rubbed his head. Someone had hit him so hard his helmet was dented.
What went wrong? He said. I had their boss down.
As I understand it, sir, the Dregs think that any leader who is stupid enough to be defeated so easily isn't worth following. It's a Klatchian thing.
Vimes tried to persuade himself that there wasn't a hint of sarcasm in Carrot's voice as he went on.
They're not really very interested in leaders, sir, to tell you the truth. They look on them as a sort of ornament. You know, just someone to shout charge, sir.
A leader has to do other things, Carrot.
The dregs think charge pretty well covers all of them, sir.
Vimes managed to stand up. Strange muscles twanged in his legs. He tottered forward.
Here, let me give you a hand, said Carrot, catching him.
The sun was setting. Ragged tents clustered below one of the dunes, and there was the glow of firelight. Someone was laughing. It didn't sound like a prison. But then, thought Vimes, the desert was probably better than bars. He wouldn't even know which way to run, feet or no feet.
The dregs, like all Clatchians, are a very hospitable people, said Carrot, as if he'd memorized this. They take hospitality very, very seriously.
Their captors were sitting around the fire. So were the watchmen. They'd also been persuaded to dress more suitably, which meant that Cheery looked like a girl in her mum's dress, apart from the iron helmet, and Red Shoe looked like a mummy, and Detritus was a small snow-covered mountain.
"He's gone very insensible in all this heat," whispered Carrot. "And that's Constable Visit over there arguing religion. There are 653 religions on the Clatchian continent."
"He must be having fun."
"And this is Jabbar," said Carrot.
Exhibit A, who looked like a slightly older version of 71-hour Ahmed, stood up and salaamed to Vimes.
"Effendi,"
he said.
"He's the... well, he's like an official wise man," said Carrot.
"Oh, so he's not the one who told them to charge," said Vimes. His head buzzed with the heat.
"No, that's the leader," said Carrot,
"whenever they have one."
"So perhaps Jabbar tells them when it's wise to charge," said Vimes brightly.
"It is always wise to charge, Effendi," said Jabbar.
He bowed again.
"My tent is your tent,"
he said.
"It is," said Vimes.
"My wives are your wives."
Vimes looked panicky.
"They are, really?"
"My food is your food,"
Jabbar went on. Vimes stared down at the dish by the fire. It looked like a sheep or a goat had been the main course, and the man bent down, picked up a morsel, and handed it to him. Sam Vimes looked at the mouthful, and it looked back.
"The best part," said Jabbar,
and made appreciative sucking noises. He added something in Clatchian. There was some muffled laughter from the other men around the fire.
This looks like a sheep's eyeball," said Vimes doubtfully.
"Yes, sir," said Carrot, "but it is unwise to..."
"You know what," Vimes went on, "I think this is a little game called Let's See What Effendi Will Swallow, and I'm not swallowing this, my friend."
Jabbar gave him an appraising look. The sniggering stopped.
"Then it is true that you can see further than most," he said.
"So can this food," said Vimes. "My father told me never to eat anything that can wink back."
There was one of those little hanging-by-a-thread moments, which might suddenly rock one way or the other into a gale of laughter or sudden death. Then Jabbar slapped Vimes on the back. The eyeball shot off his palm and into the shadows.
"Well done! Extremely good! First time it have not worked in 20 years. Now sit down and have proper rice and sheep, just like mother."
There was a certain feeling of relaxation. Vimes found himself pulled down. Bottoms shuffled aside to make room for him, and a big slab of bread, dripping with meat, was put in front of him. Vimes prodded at it, as politely as he dared, and then took the usual view that if you can recognize at least half of it, it's probably okay to eat the rest.
"So we're your prisoners, Mr. Jabbar."
"Honored guests. My tent is..."
"But how could I put this? You want us to enjoy your hospitality for some time."
"We have tradition," said Jabbar. "A man who is a guest in your tent, even if he is your worst enemy, you owe him hospitality for 3 days.
3 days, eh?" said Vimes.
"I learn language on..."
Jabbar waved a hand vaguely.
"You know, wooden thing, a camel of the sea."
"Boat?"
"Right, but too many water."
He slapped Vimes on the back again, so that hot fat spilled into his lap.
"Any road up. Lots speaking more Porkian these days, Effendi. It is a language of merchant."
He put an inflection on the word that suggested it was the same as earthworm.
So you have to know how to say things like, give us all your money, said Vimes.
Why ask? Said Jabbar. We take it anyway. But now,
he spat at the fire with amazing accuracy,
they say we got to stop. This is wrong. What harm we do?
Apart from killing people and taking all their merchandise, said Vimes. Jabbar laughed again.
Wali said you were a big diplomatic. But we don't kill merchants. Why should we kill merchants? What is the sense? How foolish to be killing gift horse that lays the golden egg.
You could make money exhibiting it, certainly, said Vimes.
We kill merchants, we rob too much. They never come back. Dumb. We let them go, they get rich again. Our sons rob them. Such is wisdom.
Ah, it's a sort of agriculture, said Vimes.
Right. But if you plant merchants, they don't grow so good.
Vimes realized that it was getting colder as the sun went down. In fact, a lot colder. He inched closer to the fire. Why is he called 71-hour Ahmed? He said. The murmur of conversation stopped. Suddenly, all eyes were on Jabbar, except the one that had ended up in the shadows.
Not so diplomatic, said Jabbar.
We chase him up here, then suddenly we're ambushed by you. That seems...
I know nothing, said Jabbar.
Why won't you... Vimes began.
Sir, said Carrant urgently, that would be very unwise, sir. Look, I had a bit of a talk with Jabbar while you were, resting. It's a bit political, I'm afraid.
What is it?
Prince Kadram is trying to unite the whole of Klatch, you see.
Dragging it, kicking and screaming into the century of the fruit bat.
Why, yes, sir. How did you...
Just a lucky guess. Go on.
That he has been having trouble, said Carrot.
What kind? Said Vimes.
Us, said Jabbar proudly.
None of the tribes like the idea, sir, Carrot went on. They've always fought amongst themselves, and now most of them are fighting him. Historically, sir, Klatch isn't so much an empire as an argument.
He say you must be educated. You must be learning to pay taxes. We do not wish to be educated about taxes, said Jabbar.
So you think you're fighting for your freedom, said Vimes.
Jabbar hesitated and looked at Carrot. There was a brief exchange in Klatchian. Then Carrot said,
That's a rather difficult question for a dreg, sir. You see, their word for freedom is the same as their word for fighting.
They certainly make their language do a lot of work, don't they?
Vimes was feeling better in the colder air. He took out a crushed and damp packet of cigars, pulled a coal out of the fire and took a deep drag.
So, Prince Charming's got a lot of troubles at home, has he? Does Vetinari know this?
Does a camel shit in the desert, sir?
You're really getting the hang of Klatch, aren't you? Said Vimes.
Jabbar rumbled something. There was more laughter.
Jabbar says a camel certainly does shit in the desert, sir. Otherwise you wouldn't have anything to light your cigar with, sir.
Once again, there was one of those moments when Vimes felt that he was under close scrutiny.
Be diplomatic, Vetinari had told him.
He took another deep draw.
Improves the flavour, he said. Remind me to take some home.
In Jabbar's eyes, the judges held up at least a couple of grudging eights.
A man on a horse came and said we must fight the foreign dogs.
That's us, sir, said Carrot helpfully,
because you have stolen an island that is under the sea. But what is that to us? We know no harm of you, foreign devils, but the men who oil their beards in Al-Khali we do not like. So we send him back.
All of him? Said Vimes.
We are not barbaric. He was clearly a madman, but we kept his horse.
And 71-hour Ahmed told you to keep us, didn't he? Said Vimes.
No one orders the dregs. It is our pleasure to keep you here.
And when will it be your pleasure to let us go? When Ahmed tells you?
Jabbar stared at the fire.
I will not speak of him. He is devious and cunning and not to be trusted.
But you are dregs too.
Yes.
Jabbar slapped Vimes on the back again.
We know what we are talking about.
The Clachian fishing boat was a mile or two out of harbour when it seemed to its captain that it was suddenly riding better in the water. Perhaps the barnacles have dropped off, he thought. When his boat was lost in the evening mists, a length of bent pipe rose slowly out of the swell and squeaked around until it faced the coast. A distant tinny voice said, "Oh, no!" And another tinny voice said,
"What's up, Sarge? Take a look through this."
"Okay." There was a pause. Then the second tinny voice said,
"Oh, bugger."
What was riding at anchor before the city of Al-Khali wasn't a fleet. It was a fleet of fleets. The masts looked like a floating forest. Down below, Lord Vetinari took his turn to peer through the pipe.
"So many ships," he said. "In such a short time, too. How very well organized."
Very well organized.
One might almost say astonishingly well organized. As they say, if you would seek war, prepare for war.
I believe, my lord, the saying is, if you would seek peace, prepare for war,
Leonard ventured. Vetinari put his head on one side and his lips moved as he repeated the phrase to himself. Finally, he said, No, I just don't see that one at all. He ducked back into his seat.
Let us proceed with care, he said. We can go ashore under cover of darkness.
Can we maybe go ashore under cover of cover? Said Sergeant Colon.
In fact, these extra ships will make our plan that much easier, said the patrician, ignoring him.
Our plan? Said Colon.
People within the Clachian hegemony come in every shape and colour.
Vetinari glanced at Nobby.
Practically every shape and colour, he added. So our appearance on the streets should not cause undue comment.
He glanced at Nobby again.
To any great extent. But we're wearing a uniform, sir, said Sergeant Colon. It's not like we can say we're on our way to a fancy dress party.
Well, I'm not taking mine off, said Nobby firmly. I'm not running around in me drawers, not in a port. Sailors are at sea a long time. You hear stories.
That'd be worse, said the sergeant, without wasting time calculating how long any sailor would need to be at sea before the vision of Nobby Nobbs would present itself as anything other than a target.
Because if we're not in uniform, we'll be spies. And you know what happens to spies?
Are you going to tell me, Sarge?
Excuse me, your lordship.
Sergeant Colon raised his voice. The patrician looked up from a conversation with Leonard.
Yes, Sergeant. What do they do to spies in Clatch, sir?
Let me see, said Leonard. Oh, yes, I believe they give you to the women.
Nobby brightened up.
Oh, well, that doesn't sound too bad.
No, Nobby,
Colon began.
Because I've seen the pictures in that book, The Perfumed Allotment, that Corporal Angua was reading, and...
No, listen, Nobby, you got the wrong... I mean, blimey, I didn't know you could do that with a...
Nobby, listen.
And then there's this bit where she...
Corporal Nobbs,
Colon yelled.
Yes, Sarge?
Colon leaned forward and whispered in Nobby's ear. The corporal's expression changed slowly.
They really? Yes, Nobby. They really? Yes, Nobby.
They don't do that at home.
We ain't at home, Nobby. I wish we was.
Although you hear stories about the agony, Aunt Sarge.
Gentlemen, said Lord Vetinari, I am afraid Leonard is being rather fanciful. That may apply to some of the mountain tribes, but Clatch is an ancient civilization, and that sort of thing is not done officially. I should imagine they'd give you a cigarette.
A cigarette? Said Fred.
Yes, Sergeant, and a nice sunny wall to stand in front of.
Sergeant Colon examined this for any downside.
A nice roll-up and a wall to lean against, he said.
I think they prefer you to stand up straight, Sergeant.
Fair enough. No need to be sloppy just because you're a prisoner.
Ah, well, I don't mind risking it, then.
Well done, said the patrician calmly. Tell me, Sergeant, in your long military career, did anyone ever consider promoting you to an officer?
No, sir. I cannot think why.
Night poured over the desert. It came suddenly in purple. In the clear air, the stars drilled down out of the sky, reminding any thoughtful watcher that it is in the deserts and high places that religions are generated. When men see nothing but bottomless infinity over their heads, They have always had a driving and desperate urge to find someone to put in the way. Life emerged from the burrows and fissures. Soon, the desert was filled with the buzz and click and screech of creatures which, lacking mankind's superior brain power, did not concern themselves with finding someone to blame, and instead tried to find someone to eat. At around 3 in the morning, Sam Vimes walked out of the tent for a smoke. The cold air hit him like a door. It was freezing. That wasn't what was supposed to happen in deserts, was it? Deserts were all hot and sand and camels and... He struggled for a while, as a man whose geographical knowledge got severely cramped once he got off paved road. Camels, yes, and dates, and possibly bananas and coconuts, but the temperature here made your breath tinkle in the air. He waved his cigar packet theatrically at a dreg who was lounging near the tent. The man shrugged. The fire was just a heap of grey, but Vimes poked around in the vain hope of finding a glowing ember. He was amazed at how angry he was. Ahmed was the key, he knew it. And now they were stuck out here in the desert. The man had gone, and they were in the hands of quite likable people, fair enough. Brigands, maybe, the dry land equivalent of pirates. But Carrot would have said they were jolly good chaps for all that. If he were content to be their guests, then they were as nice as pie, or sheep's eyeball and treacle, or whatever you got out here. Something moved in the moonlight. A shadow slipped down the side of a dune. Something howled out in the desert night. Tiny hairs rose all down Vimes's back, just like they had for his distant ancestors. The night is always old. He'd walked too often down dark streets in the secret hours and felt the night stretching away, and known in his blood that while days and kings and empires come and go, the night is always the same age, always eons deep. Terrors unfolded in the velvet shadows, and while the nature of the talons may change, the nature of the beast does not. He stood up quietly and reached for his sword. It wasn't there. They'd taken it away. They'd not even... "A fine night," said a voice beside him. Jabbar was standing by his shoulder. "Who is out there?" Vimes hissed. "An enemy." "Which one?" Teeth gleamed in the shadows. "We will find out, Effendi." "Why would they attack you now?" "Maybe they think we have something they want, Effendi." More shadows slid across the desert. And one rose right up behind Jabbar, reached down and picked him up. A huge grey hand dragged his sword out of his belt.
"What do you want me to do with him, Mr. Vimes?"
"Detritus." The troll saluted with the hand that still held the dreg.
"All present and correct, sir."
"But..." And then Vimes realised. "It's freezing cold. Your brain's working again."
"With rather more efficiency, sir."
"Is this a djinn?" said Jabbar.
"I don't know, but I could certainly do with one," said Vimes. He finally managed to locate some matches in his pockets and lit one. "Put him down, Sergeant," he said, puffing his cigar into life. "Jabbar, this is Sergeant Detritus. He could break every bone in your body, including some of the small ones in the fingers, which are quite hard to do." The darkness went schwup, and something whispered past the back of his neck, just a slice of a second before Jabbar cannoned into him and bore him to the ground.
"They shoot at the light."
"Hmm?" Vimes raised his head cautiously and spat out sand and fragments of tobacco.
"Mr. Vimes?"
Only Carrot could whisper like that. He associated whispering with concealment and untruth, and compromised by whispering very loudly. To Vimes's horror, the man came round the edge of a tent, holding a tiny lamp.
"Put that down!"
But he didn't have time to finish the sentence, because somewhere out in the night a man screamed. It was a high-pitched scream, and was suddenly cut off.
"Ah," said Carrot, crouching down by Vimes and blowing out the lamp. "That was Angua."
"That was nothing like... Oh, yeah, I think I see what you mean," Vimes said uneasily. "She's out there, is she?"
"I heard her earlier. She's probably enjoying herself. She doesn't really get much of a chance to let herself go in Ankh-Morpork."
No. Vimes had a mental picture of a werewolf letting go. But surely Angua wouldn't.
"You too. You're getting along okay, are you?" he said, trying to make out shapes in the darkness.
"Oh, fine, sir, fine."
"So her turning into a wolf occasionally doesn't worry you?"
Vimes couldn't bring himself to say it.
"No problems then?"
"Oh, not really, sir. She buys her own dog biscuits, and she's got her own flap in the door. When it's full moon, I don't really get involved."
There were shouts in the night, and then a shape erupted from the darkness, streaked past Vimes, and disappeared into a tent. It didn't wait for a door. It simply hit the cloth at full speed, and continued until the tent collapsed around it.
"And what is that?" said Jabbar.
"This may take some explaining," said Vimes, picking himself up. Carrot and Detritus were already hauling at the collapsed tent.
"We are dregs," said Jabbar reproachfully. "We are supposed to fold tents silently in the night, not..."
There was enough moonlight. Angua sat up and snatched a piece of tent out of Carrot's hand. "Thank you," she said, wrapping it round her. "And before anyone says anything, I just bit him on the bum. Hard. And that was not the soft option, let me tell you." Jabbar looked back into the desert, and then down at the sand, and then at Angua. Vimes could see him thinking, and put a fraternal arm around his shoulders. "I'd better explain," he began.
"There's a couple of hundred soldiers out there," Angua snapped.
"Later.
They're taking up positions all round you, and they don't look nice. Has anyone got any clothes that might fit, and some decent food, and a drink? There's no water in this place."
"They will not dare attack before dawn," said Jabbar.
"And what will you do, sir?" said Carrot.
"At dawn, we will charge."
I wonder if I could suggest an alternative approach."
"Alternative? It is right to charge. Charging is what dawn is for."
Carrot saluted Vimes.
"I've been reading your book, sir, while you were asleep. Tacticus has got quite a lot to say about how to deal with overwhelming odds, sir."
"Yes."
"He says take every opportunity to turn them into underwhelming odds, sir. We could attack now."
"But it's dark, man."
"It's just as dark for the enemy, sir. I mean, it's pitch black. You wouldn't know who the hell you were fighting. Half the time you'd be shooting your own side."
"We wouldn't, sir, because there'd only be a few of us, sir. All we need to do is crawl out there, make a bit of noise, and then let them get on with it. Tacticus says all armies are the same size in the night, sir."
"There might be something in that," said Angua. "They're crawling around in ones and twos, and they're dressed pretty much like..." She waved a hand at Jabbar.
"This is Jabbar," said Carrot. "He's sort of not the leader."
Jabbar grinned nervously.
"It happens often in your country, where dogs turn into naked women?"
"Sometimes days can go past and it doesn't happen at all," Angua snapped. "I'd like some clothes, please, and a sword if there's going to be fighting. I think Clatchians have a very particular view about women fighting," Carrot began.
"Yes," said Jabbar. "We expect them to be good at it, Blue Eyes. We are dregs."